Live Creative Now, episode 46.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Melissa Dinwiddie, Passion Pluralite Artist, Happiness Catalyst, and Creativity Instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, the truth is, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. Last week in episode 45, I talked about why even creative pros, even people who make their living being creative all day long, really need to jump into the creative sandbox regularly. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that one, go back and find it. This week, I'm sharing with you a conversation with Brody Welch, who is a Chinese medicine practitioner. Now, on the surface, that might seem a little bit odd, given that my focus is, of course, creative expression and play. What the heck does Chinese medicine have to do with living a full-color creative life? Well, it turns out it has quite a lot to do with it. So, without any further ado, here is my conversation with Brody Welch. Hey, everybody, it's Melissa. I am so happy to have Brody Welch with me today. Brody is, well, what she writes on her about page is, "I practice and teach Chinese medicine so you can experience vibrant health." And you may be wondering what the heck that has to do with living a full color creative life and why am I having her on the Live Creative Now podcast? Well, she also writes on her about page, "Health isn't just the absence of symptoms, though that's certainly nice. It's feeling present for your life and the people in it. It's feeling like you're living in alignment with your deepest values, giving your gifts to the world, and doing this in a sustainable way." That should sound familiar to you, because the person who is living that statement is living what I would call a full color life. So if you're living in alignment with your deepest values, if you have a deep hunger for creative expression, you will be integrating creative expression into your day, right? If you are giving your gifts to the world, you will be sharing your work. And of course, that touches people. And that is, of course, a big part of how you change the world. So for me, creative expression is the lens through which I focus on living a full color life, living a life of joy and happiness and alignment, right? But of course, it's so much bigger than creativity alone, because before we can get to the creative play, we have to give ourselves permission. And we have to value ourselves enough to make the time, right? We have to get past all that self-doubt, all the fear gremlins, all the critical gremlins. And I see living a creative life as a form of self-care, radical self-care. And all the other self-care practices that we engage in, from meditation to pulling back from overwork to getting enough sleep to seeking out acupuncture, doing qigong, all of that stuff is intimately interwoven with our ability to feed our creative hungers. It is all connected. If you pull one lever, everything else shifts. So yes, absolutely, having a Chinese medicine practitioner on the show is entirely appropriate. So with that very long introduction, Brody, thank you so much for spending time with me today. It's really lovely to get a chance to meet you online.
I'm really excited to talk to you, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I'm really curious. I have to say, I've been a a patient of acupuncture and Chinese medicine for many years, and it's been pretty amazing how it has helped me. And I know that I turned to alternative medicine as a alternative medicine. I kind of hate that term, but that's what we, you know, raised in the US tend to think.
Sure. Yeah.
I turned to those different modalities out of desperation when the, you know, traditional Western medicine wasn't helping me. I had a dance injury when I was 20, and that ultimately ended my dance career. And it was those alternative modalities that made a difference for me. So that's what made me go to the alternative medicines, was that the physical therapy and the sports medicine and what they were doing for me wasn't doing the job. So I'm curious, how did you end up becoming a Chinese medicine practitioner? What's the story inside of that?
Oh, the path was not a direct one. And incidentally, what you're saying, how you found some relief and some help with acupuncture where other things hadn't worked. That's usually the case. Nobody thinks to themselves, oh, I want to go get stuck with needles, you know, like that people aren't looking for that as a solution. But a lot of times the things that come out of that, you know, like, I don't know, it sounds like you've gone on to use it for other things in your life too, in addition to just that original injury.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So it is the kind of thing where oftentimes, like, because what we're doing in Chinese medicine is truly holistic. We're encouraging the body to heal itself. And so and oftentimes when we pull on that thread of like, well, what am I doing in my life that's either making this worse or better or perpetuating it? Like, it's basically everything we do is either part of the problem or part of the solution. And that creating balance is kind of the name of the game. So, but anyway, to answer the question you actually asked, I have always been a really idealistic person, and I obsessed with authenticity as a youngster, and really was kind of hell bent on changing the world with a capital C, you know, like really like being an activist or being in politics or government or something. And that was definitely the direction that I was headed down through college, and had a really expensive East Coast liberal arts education, and graduated and realized that that's not at all a life that would make me happy whatsoever. And at the same time, like, I had always been like, you know, the girl going around and giving little shoulder massages to the adults at the table, and always been told like, wow, you have such a gift, you have amazing healing hands. And so then kind of was biding my time going to massage therapy school. And in massage school is where I discovered in a shiatsu class, which is Asian body work that's based on the principles of Chinese medicine, I just fell in love with the theory, you know, like the idea that the universe is comprised of energy, which is flowing inside of us and around us and between us all the time. It's like that, you know, that was sort of central to my spiritual view. And that basically that these two forces, you know, if everything's chi, it becomes really hard to talk about. So we got to subdivide it into these two basic categories of yin and yang. And then, you know, that we all have sort of the elements of nature are within us, this idea of the microcosm and the macrocosm being intimately related. I just thought it was so poetic and beautiful as a philosophy. And looking at, you know, wow, like massage is hard work, you know, and I have, you know, incredible respect for massage therapists. And yet so many more tools in the Chinese medicine toolbox, with needles, with herbs, lifestyle and diet counseling, with teaching Qigong, which is basically Taoist yoga, you know, like just there's so many ways that we can apply this beautiful, elegant philosophy of life to people's lives and really empower people with so many different tools. So there was no going back. There was nothing, you know, that was just the next thing. So I was basically in school straight without a break until I was 27. And then I opened my practice 12 years ago. So yeah.
When you went to your fancy East Coast liberal arts college?
Oh, an integration of government history, economics, and philosophy taught in Oxford style writing intensive, blah, blah, blah. Total heady, total, you know, like wonderful, but yet setting myself up for a life where, you know, of constantly having to whip people up into a frenzy. And it's just thinking like, that's not how I want to live. I'd much more like be a self-care advocate. And, you know, and at that point, I didn't even know just how often I would be trying to tell people to like take that radical act of doing less seriously, right? You know, like one of the first homework assignments I always give people is like, find 30 minutes a day to yourself. And people look at me like I'm crazy. And yet it's, you know, oftentimes there is, you know, just no matter what is going wrong in the body, the solutions are not all that complicated sometimes, you know, like sometimes they're really obvious and we just need somebody to hold up the mirror.
Yeah. And it seems like that it's sort of surprising why that isn't a more common response because, you know, if I were to go to my doctor at the medical clinic, I don't know. I can't really imagine my doctor saying you need to take 30 minutes a day for yourself or go meditate or something like that. Right. Even though, you know, having the experience of being an extreme overworker and over the past few years, really dialing it. Well, I can't say that I've dialed it back as much as I would ultimately like to, but I've dialed it back a lot and I'm getting to bed earlier and getting up earlier and I have rituals and I meditate every day and
good for you.
I've incorporated so many self-care practices that were not part of my world in the, you know, just a few years ago that an MD would never have thought to suggest because their vocabulary is surgery and drugs and
yes,
you know, whatever.
Sure. Yeah. They're, you know, that allopathic medicine is very much about, you know, being against the pathogen and not necessarily about the ecosystem. You know, an analogy that I use to kind of explain Chinese medicine and its differences from Western allopathic medicine is that rather than seeing the body as a machine to be fixed, it is a garden to be tended, you know, and that that there's an interrelationship with everything. And so plus the fact that most doctors are constrained by insurance companies only paying for X number of minutes of contact with you. And, you know, so who has time to actually, you know, teach you things about how to take care of yourself? It's a lot of, I think, well-intentioned physicians are constrained in a system that's in some ways a sinking ship. So it is sort of, you know, it's kind of freeing to be out a little bit outside of that, to be someone who has, you know, I like being able to spend 45 minutes with a new patient, just getting their story and helping them see the connections between what's going on, and what they could be doing about it. And really it's, you know, it's medicine that works really well for people who are wanting to take a more active role, and who are willing to be partners on that journey rather than kind of the do me model of medicine of like, give me pills or let me lie here and you can cut into my body or needle me or, you know, like whatever your modality is.
Right.
It's just, you know, I mean, you can certainly take that approach. And also the process tends to work faster. Especially if it's something other than just like a physical injury where acupuncture really is amazing medicine in terms of getting the body to heal itself. But for pretty much anything else, you know, like that ranging from, you know, digestive issues or fertility issues or hormone imbalances or sleep issues or stress, you know, like just so many, you know, we know that stress is the cause of or exacerbates most of what people go and seek medical attention for. It's like all of that stuff is, it's what you do every day is certainly going to trump what happens in somebody's office once a week or once a month.
It is so true. And yet it feels like that message is like trying to get that message across and really get people to get that message. So often it feels like, I don't know, shouting at the wilderness or swimming upstream, or I don't know what the right metaphor is, but it's definitely against certainly a lot of the messaging that's out there kind of in the world that we see on TV or wherever, you know what I mean?
Sure. Well, we live in a consumer culture, right? We're taught to be consumers of everything. I'm sure you encounter this with your work in helping people live creative lives is that, you know, like we're taught to buy our music and our entertainment and our art and not create it ourselves. And like, same thing with health. It's like, it comes from a bottle or it comes from a gym membership. It's, you know, it's not something we can do ourselves, you know, like that. And it's different way of looking at it. Plus the fact that really in Chinese medicine, there's three causes of disease, right? There's the external stuff like viruses and bacteria that kind of come in from the outside and screw up your ecosystem. So we call those the external causes. There's the miscellaneous causes, right? Like the things that happen to you in daily life, like what goes into your body, whether or not you were hit by a bus, you know, like just things that can happen that disrupts things, obviously, or the things that we're doing to ourselves all the time through our lifestyle and diet. And then the third is the internal causes of disease are the emotions.
Hmm.
So that's it. You know, it's going to be one of those three things. Right. And so two out of those three people have control over to some degree.
But. Yeah. And emotions are so interrelated to, you know, how you're spending your time during your day, right? I mean, I know that I can change my emotions by going over to my art table and spending 10 or 15 minutes painting. That will change my emotional state. Yeah. Or going over to my looping station and making music for 5 minutes, or playing my ukulele or my pandero for just a few minutes. That will change my emotional state. So I have a lot of levers that I can pull that will affect that. Mm-hmm. And
absolutely.
I think that, like what you're talking about, this Chinese medicine way of, you know, philosophy and approach to wellness is, it's so much more about taking responsibility for your own wellness.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, and a lot of times people are like, okay, well, I like that idea, but I don't really know how.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it says, if you go back to one of the classics of Chinese medicine that was written 2,200 years ago, okay, so like the Yellow Emperor's classic of internal medicine, page one, I heard, you know, this is a conversation between the imperial physician and the emperor, and they're having this dialogue, and the emperor says, so, what's the deal? You know, like people used to live to at least 100 without getting sick, you know, and now people have a lifespan of half that amount of time. What's gone wrong? And the emperor, you know, he's told, well, basically, like we've forgotten how to live in harmony with nature, you know, like people. So this was like long ago, 2,200 years ago, they're saying people used to,
wow.
You know, so this is been going on a while, you know, and really it's like what we're up against now is just this culture that overemphasizes the doing, the busy, the productive, the speed, the yang stuff, right? The masculine aspect, the hot, the busy, the, you know, the doing, all of that. And the, you know, the idea of yin time, right? That space, that rest, that ability to nurture ourselves, to get sleep, to, you know, to get to bed on time, to do the meditation, the things that you're mentioning. It's like that yin is what enables yang to happen, right? In that yin yang symbol, that you notice that they transform into one another at the extremes, right? So like if you have extreme yang, you're going to get exhausted and be forced to rest. And if you get, you know, amazing sleep and you're totally steeped in self-care, it's going to give birth to this vibrant, overflowing creativity.
I love that. You write something somewhere on your website. I think you write it many, many places on your website. One of your core messages is self-care is not selfish.
And
I agree completely with that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It sounds like you touch on some of these themes regularly. And I imagine that you wouldn't be talking about it if people were just like, oh yeah, no problem.
Right.
I'll do that. Because because there's very little cultural support for things like taking care of yourself. Nobody is going to cheer when you decide to stop overworking or overserving. Right. You know, it's like it's not in their best interest for you to set a boundary and take care of yourself. And yet we know, you know, it's just, I work with a lot of women who are high achievers, you know, like high powered people who are doing a lot with their lives. I work with a lot of busy moms who give a lot to their families, and, you know, maybe they're taking care of aging parents or they're or a spouse, or, and it's like, there's that sense of being so depleted because they've given everything away, and that, and the idea of, you know, when I suggest, like, you know, well, what about the time for your joy? What about the time for your sleep? What about the time to, you know, to take a walk and be in nature, or pet your cat, or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, like go, honor your need to paint or to sing or to, you know, to whatever it is that, that they look at me as though like, well, I can't do that. It's like, I haven't earned the right to do that. I haven't worked hard enough yet, even though the person is, you know, spends their whole life working, you know, and it expending its effort, and the idea that we somehow, that it's indulgent to just even take care of the basics when so much of that is at the root of not only, you know, of why they're feeling exhausted, stressed out, and crappy overall. And that, and we always, you know, at least, you know, for me, I'm certainly not immune to this. I'm definitely a recovering young addict, and, you know, still kind of working with that actively, as someone who runs a business and treats patients in clinic and is a step parent and plays music in a band. And, you know, like, I have all these irons in the fire, just as much as most people, and still struggle with it, with that idea of, that I don't always have to be doing. It's so ingrained. And yet, I know that I can't show up for the people in my life the way that I want to when I'm running on fumes, and, you know, and when I haven't, you know, been doing the things that for me connect me to me, you know. Yeah. Otherwise it just feels like I'm going through the motions and like kind of I'm a ghost in my own life. And it's, and I see that, you know, I see that as kind of an epidemic, especially women who are socialized to be caretakers, that idea of giving people permission to rest, to play, to just engage in the absolute basics. It's like, I really would love to change that sort of wearing the busyness as a badge of honor. I'd really love to change that about our culture and get people to proudly say, you know what I did this afternoon? Nothing, you know, like, so yeah, I've actually issued challenges to people to like, do less than you're capable of today, you know, but like, and that can, you know, I'm playing, I don't really want everybody to do nothing, but to even just create the space for spontaneity and for like what might bubble up, I think that's a really important part of health.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's definitely my leading edge. Mm-hmm. Giving myself permission. And I suspect I am not the only one who kind of has a pattern of, and this is something I'm really aware of, so I'm getting better at interrupting it, but instead of really saying, oh, you know what, I'm going to take 2 hours and I'm going to play, or I'm going to go on a walk, or I'm going to read a novel, or I'm going to take a nap. Something that is, you know, I would consider chill time, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of giving myself permission, historically what I've done is basically said, oh no, I don't deserve to do that. I can't possibly do that. That's wasteful. That's not productive. That's self-indulgent, yada, yada, yada. And so then I end up kind of stealing that time, putting air quotes there, mm-hmm. by doing something really that doesn't fuel me. The way that if I took those 2 hours and took a nap or read or went on a walk or whatever, I would be recharged and refreshed and fueled up afterwards. But instead, mm-hmm. I take, you know, sort of steal these little, like my inner rebel. It's like, whoa, mm-hmm. I need to be working. But instead, I'm going to like take 5 minutes and surf the internet, which turns into an hour or whatever, and doesn't fuel me at all. Right. Right?
It's the empty calories of self-care, you know, like it's junk food. It's not, it doesn't really fill you up in the same way that giving yourself full permission to go, you know, really into your art or your rest or your play or your walk would.
Yes. Yeah. My husband and I, a couple of years ago now, I think I was probably before we were married, I was working. I work a lot. I work really, I'm really intense about my business and I'm thinking about my business all the time. And I love my business and it's, you know, a lot of what I do is very creative and I love that part of it. But I was just working way too much and mm-hmm. not getting enough downtime with my husband. And so I finally realized this has to change. if I want to, you know, nourish and sustain this relationship, so as an experiment, we instituted date night.
Oh, nice.
Once a week, which like, hello, why wasn't I doing that before in some ways? But how great that I did institute that. And it's such an easy thing to let slide because, you know, for various reasons, like, oh, money's tight, we can't go out. So therefore it doesn't, date night, you know, doesn't happen because we're not right. as good about setting those boundaries around date night when we don't leave the house, you know, those mm-hmm. kinds of things. But that one change, instituting date night, like rippled into all kinds of other changes gradually over time and has made such a huge difference. So it's actually that today is Thursday and Thursday is date night. So it's like, you know what? I shut down the computer and I take off. And I even said to my husband, can we make a no devices rule for date night so that neither of us is sucked into our phones, right? So we can really like be present with each other. That is relationship care and that is self-care and that's creating those margins and that, you know, that white space in our day to just be so important.
It's also really, it sounds like, I mean, so you made a really conscious choice that I value this relationship and therefore I, you know, that I need to act on that value and live in harmony with it. And so, yeah it's really, we really like our actions are, you know, where we choose to put our ergs of energy, you know, it's like we are voting every time we do anything that for what we value. And so, yeah, quality time to nurture that relationship absolutely will have that ripple effect in your life and I'm sure has given back to you multifold.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Ways.
Definitely. Well, the reason that I think that we both talk about these same topics of self-care, not being selfish and the importance of having chill time and white space and margins and all of that is because it's so hard for everybody to take that and to give ourselves that. And I mean, it's hard. It's really hard for me. It's a continual practice. And like I always say, the most important practice is simply getting back on the wagon because we are going to stumble off of every single practice. And so as long as we get back on the wagon, it doesn't matter that we stumble as long as we get back on.
Absolutely. And I would add to that, that when I, one of the things that I try to teach people obviously is habit change, right? And how to actually make these new things stick in their lives and that making something modular, you know, so like make it absolutely like when I teach meditation, for example, this is actually module 4 of one of my online classes, is really about like, make it non-negotiable, make it a sacred promise to yourself that you're going to do this daily practice. But yeah, some days you might only have 5 minutes and other days you might have 20 and other days you might have an hour and that's all right. You know, like, because you're going to show up for yourself and continuing to do that it over and over again helps reinforce the fact that you are someone who does this, right? Yes. I am someone who makes time to meditate. I am someone who makes time for art. I am someone who makes time to go on dates with my husband, even if they're short, even if they're just walks around the block with no phones, you know, like whatever. It's still like, if that's what it has to be, okay, maybe we can't, you know, we can't do a 3-hour, like 5-course meal, but you know, like, but we can't do this. Right. And so that looking at really food choices, you know, if someone wants to lose weight, someone wants to, you know, that someone's going down that, you know, metabolic syndrome, diabetes path. It's like, you know, just like these changes can be really small, like, you know, like, because it's the little changes over time that are the ones that matter and that we end up really seeing results with. So just, you know, being able to, be compassionate with ourselves and do things, go for the low hanging fruit, you know, make those small changes early.
Definitely. Yeah. I love that modular concept as well. And that's really how I've been approaching like my morning. I have a morning ritual and I drink 2 glasses of water and I have a whole episode that goes over my morning ritual episode. Yeah. I can't remember. I think it's episode 12. I don't remember. I'll put it in the show notes, but, I do exactly that. If I don't have time to meditate for 15 or 20 minutes, which is my preference, then I'll meditate for 10 or 5 or 2. Even if all I can do is sit on my cushion and do one in and out breath, then at least I can say to myself, I did that thing today, and then move on to the next element of my morning ritual, and I feel more complete. You know, we are such creatures of habit, right?
Absolutely.
We want to have that feeling of being, yes, everything, this is a normal day, you know, like I'm getting on the track of, for my day. And that means to me that my day is going to go the way that I want it to go. Whereas on the days where I don't think modularly and I'm just going to skip meditation today, then I'm not in that same groove for the rest of the day.
Yeah, definitely. There is something to like the fact that at least a third of our day is on autopilot. And so the more something can become autopilot and have those, then it becomes this structure, this foundation that we don't have to put energy into anymore. And so, you know, if you spent one conscious breath's worth of time on your cushion, you're still carving that same groove in your brain that, you know, like that you are a meditator and that, you know, that this is non-negotiable, this is valuable, it's an essential nutrient and you're getting it every day. And when you notice that maybe there's a week's worth of that not having more than a few minutes, then you get to ask yourself, you know, like, okay, where am I biting the yang addiction hook? You know, like what is crowding? Why is there not enough room for this? And look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know when we were emailing back and forth, you mentioned that you had, you could, for example, suggest some Chinese medicine strategies that might be really relevant to Live Creative Now listeners, like acupoints or Qigong for creativity and overcoming fear. Do you have something that you might be willing to share?
Sure. I mean, any of those could be huge topics in and of themselves. But I think that what a lot of people don't know about Chinese medicine, which is I think it's one of its great strengths, is the way that dimensions of the soul and attributes of our psyche are associated with different organ systems. So, for example, if we think about like Qi is energy, and we refract light through a prism, we can see the different colors, right? So instead of just thinking about Qi and yin and yang, we can think about the five elements of wood, fire, earth, metal, and water, right? As these five different dimensions of the universe. So creativity is going to go along with the wood element, right? So like a tree, sort of upward, outward energy. Obviously it's born of something innate and then it expresses itself outward. It's part of, so plants, right? You know, the archetype would be trees. And so in the body, the wood element corresponds with the liver and the gallbladder. It's also the kind of your imagination, which allows you to time travel, right? That part of you that can leave and go off and imagine the past or project into the future, or can plug into archetypes through dreams, or, you know, like that kind of, like that part of the soul that travels is we associate that with the liver. And so, so there's definitely points on the body, which are little portals where we can actually access creative liver energy, you know, like, so really anything that's going to help. Now the liver's main job in Chinese medicine, its main job in Western medicine, obviously, is detoxifying the blood, and 400 other jobs contributing to digestion, et cetera. But in Chinese medicine, it's about the free and easy flow of qi through the body. So keeping everything unfolding on time, according to its proper cycle, keeping us kind of, the nickname for the liver is the free and easy wanderer. So being able to just move through your life with a sense of equanimity and ease and non-reactivity, basically just kind of like everything just happens. We take it in stride. It continues to unfold in its proper cycle. And like when I'm talking about timing, I mean like timing in the digestive system, timing in the menstrual cycle, timing in terms of our diurnal rhythms, our waking and sleeping and things like that. So having, you know, like, so one way of, you know, we can say that really managing stress can help your creativity, because it's the liver. Like whenever anything disrupts you, and you get tense, right, that's an example of the liver qi stagnating. what we call it. And it's so really being able to be in that sort of spacious place where you're in flow is kind of like the opposite of like that tense, stressed, you know, like kind of a place where life is an emergency. And so in general, you know, I would just suggest, you know, to listeners who are wanting to get in touch with their creativity is that, first of all, changing your relationship with stress is going to be really key to that, right? Because that's the liver. Certainly there are acupoints for that. One of my favorite acupoints is liver 3. It's just located on the foot and it can do all things livery. It's basically if you find, at the top of the foot between the big toe and the second toe, and you run your thumb up between those two bones that kind of come together like a little crook, that's liver 3. It'll be the sore spot right there. And so hanging out with those points a little bit, pressing on them firmly, not to the point of pain, but just to the point of, oh yeah, that's engaging something. That can be a point that can help with the free flow of liver qi. So that could be a place where people could do acupressure on themselves. They could anoint that point with an essential oil that might be especially good for keeping liver qi flowing. Things like blue tansy is a really nice one for liver, or more commonly peppermint or lavender, you know, are just nice to keep liver qi flowing. In terms of, you know, certainly there's an herb correlate. There's going to be whole qigong forms dedicated to the liver, that kind of thing. Fear is going to be more about the kidney, right? You know, overcoming fear, the kidneys house our will, our will with a capital W. So like your ability to exert your will in the world, or to kind of like to do your work in the world, like that which is your destiny, or like that which is deeply innate in you, is said to live in the kidneys. If you believe in the concept of destiny, it would live in the kidneys in Chinese medicine. And that the thing that that sort of timidity, that lack of being able to have a spine, to have a backbone, to express, you know, to walk forward in the world. It's like that lower back, if you can imagine in child development, it's like when, you know, right around the time that a child learns to assert her will by saying no is right around the time that, you know, we engage and we get the upright posture, you know, that the lower back kicks into gear, and like the head is, you know, we're lifting the head, we're walking, we're, you know, we're becoming autonomous and we're becoming individuals who can shape the world. And so having strong kidney energy, having strong, you know, being able to have a sense of self and being able to express that with strength and confidence, you know, kind of a chronic lack of doing that is, it may be rooted in weak adrenals, which is going to be, again, part of the kidney system in Chinese medicine. So for 5 people who come into my office with the same thing, like, hey, I want to be more creative, they don't necessarily all get liver 3. They don't necessarily all get kidney tonics. It depends on what's going on for them. But certainly for the kidneys, one of the idea of, standing in yourself and feeling strong and feeling confident. Qigong, standing Qigong could be an amazing way to do that. Just stand in your backyard with bare feet or in a park, or, you know, that feeling connected to the earth, or you don't even have to take your shoes off. Just imagine that you're connected to the earth. There's a point on the bottom of the foot that is like a little mini chakra that opens to the earth. And that point's called bubbling spring. And that allows the yin grounded energy, to come in, and it can flow up the kidney channel, which goes up the inner leg and is rooted in the lower abdomen and the lower back. So getting in touch with that, you know, spending a few minutes feeling that connected and feeling, taking some breaths into the lower belly, in yoga, something like ujjayi breathing, you know, is like victorious breath, confidence. But, you know, in the qigong allegory, which is the abdominal breathing, just it being with the low belly. This is the root of, you know, where yin and yang meet in the body is your biological center, your second chakra, your center of gravity, your hara, you know, this place that so many cultures have a name for, that is about one hand below the navel. Getting in touch with that point can be wonderful for feeling grounded and centered and feeling like, yeah, I, you know, like my, my desire to express that I have something worth expressing inside of me. And if you don't, you know, if you fundamentally doubt that, then that's a kidney issue, you know? And so your acupuncturist might well use points that support that or herbs that support that. And so out of the water element, you water a plant to make it grow. So water nourishes wood. That's the movement from kidney energy to that wood energy, right? And then it goes to fire where you're doing it, you're manifesting it, you're expressing it. And then the earth element, the fire becomes ashes, and the ashes become part of the earth again. So that's the reaping what you've sown phase. And then that earth gives rise to metal, which is that element of discernment, right? That, do I like this? Did I not like this? That judgment, letting go of what didn't work. That's the season of autumn. That's the, you know, that's the letting go. And then you're back to water again. You're back to that potential. That was a little abstract. Sorry. I gently lost everyone.
Well, having been treated by a couple of different five elements acupuncturists, listeners may not be aware of acupuncture at all or five elements acupuncture or whatever, but I am so fascinated by all that metaphoric talk in Chinese medicine with the five different elements and how they lead into the other, and this, the amazing brilliance of this system that's been around for thousands of years. And it always, I talk to my acupuncturist and I'll always ask him, what did you do and what did you find? And he'll tell me, and I'm always so fascinated, and I'll say, you know, like, oh, it just seems sort of magical. And he says, that's how I feel every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I never stop being amazed by it. You know, like, and yet I try not to use the word magical because I don't want to detract from the fact that there's plenty of science behind it, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, and yet there really are some miraculous things that happen, especially in, you know, with things like anxiety and depression and like mental, you know, it doesn't even have to be like that clinical, but, you know, but someone who's just feeling like, for example, feeling cloudy, brain fog, you know, it's in there. I just don't have access to it. Yeah. So the metaphor for that is dampness and phlegm, you know, phlegm misting the mind, misting the heart, or if which is the sensory perception. So somebody might need, you know, like to clear out the dampness, and that might be like reducing sugar, you know, like the sugar and dairy contribute to dampness. I live in the Pacific Northwest where it's damp for a lot of the year. And it's the kind of thing where like, yeah, those green smoothies, not such a great idea, you know, like that, because it's damp season and, you know, like increases like. And also just to clarify for those not familiar, is that the five element theory is part of classical Chinese medicine and traditional Chinese medicine. It's not the exclusive province of five element practitioners. So don't necessarily need to find a 5E person to engage in on this level with stuff, because it's been in the medicine for thousands of years, and it's really rich. It's rich in metaphor, and I think that people can relate to it because, like, we have all these different, we all have all of these in us all the time, and we move through them, and they move through us, and it can, you know, understanding where we are in that, either in the cycle of change or in the, in kind of like what the imbalance is internally, can really change how we live. It can help us make better choices that are medicinal.
Well, thank you for clarifying that about the five elements.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry if I made an implication of something that was confusing. So I really appreciate you clarifying.
No problem.
I wanted to ask you, going back to something you said earlier, you said that you perform in a band?
Yeah. I played cello and sing with the Hunks and the Hottie.
Wow. Cool. How long have you been doing that?
Yeah. We've just been a band for, actually my husband's in it too, and I started playing with them. They were the Hunks, and then I joined, so they changed name. I started playing with them maybe 2.5 years ago at this point. We do classic grass rock.
That is a really cool genre title.
Yeah.
I have not heard that before. Do you have a website or anything for your band?
No, we have a Facebook page. You'd think we'd have things recorded, but really it's like, we're busy people, and we only play a few times a year together, and that we use that as an excuse to get together and work up some new songs. And, but you can like us on Facebook at the Hunks and the Hottie.
Excellent. Cool. Yeah. The Hunks and the Hottie on Facebook. I'll have to look you up. Do you have other creative pursuits that you enjoy?
Well, I think class designing is pretty creative, you know, like thinking about, you know, I've been that sort of thinking lately a lot about how to translate the conversations that I've been having with thousands of people for, you know, the past 15 years in the healing arts, how to make that really accessible. And so I've been, been producing online classes. So the one about stress and anxiety and online Qigong class where my husband's doing a lot of the videography. So it's fun to just kind of like go to some, you know, somewhere beautiful and think about like, well, you know, would this be an amazing image for like the wood element or, you know, things like that. Just that it's sort of a ubiquitous part of how I see the world and that bleeds over into the playtime too. And I would say, yeah, so music is probably my most like traditional creative outlet, but I think that there's certainly like a lot of, you know, as someone who's, trying to design my life and design my business so that it actually fits with my life. That I see that as kind of a process of creation and destruction.
Definitely.
I don't know. But yeah, I used to, I'm also just trying to give myself the freedom to play. So this weekend I picked up watercolors for the first time in decades, you know, like just got them out and just played with them because why not, you know, and just trying to give myself opportunities to engage my creativity just because it's fun.
Fist bump.
Yeah.
Yes, that is absolutely reason enough to do it. It's one of the best reasons there is. Mm-hmm. Cool. Anything else that you would love to share with my audience about how what you do affects living that life of wellness, that full color life?
Well, I guess first of all applaud everyone who is on that mission to be living a full color life, because that ripple effect that you were talking about earlier is real when we inspire each other through our lives, I think. That's part of how culture changes is when we change ourselves and we make it known. And that gives people mm-hmm. permission. One of the things that I'm also hoping to create is like kind of a something that doesn't exist yet in the world, but is a really small group program for people who want to apply Chinese medicine to their daily lives through everything from essential oils to breathing to diet to lifestyle and that's like that's kind of my dream right now. I have fingers crossed that it will run, but it's the kind of thing where like that doesn't exist, and I would love for it to exist. And being able to trust myself and my path enough to follow that creative urge and bring something new into the world feels right, you know. So I'm sure that it will happen eventually. It may not be on my timetable, but keep continuing to take steps towards what I feel called towards. And so I think that anybody who's doing that, anybody who is kind of listening, spending time each day tuning into themselves and living from the inside out and in an expressive way is kind of a fellow traveler on this path, and that we need each other. And so would love for people to connect, to reach out if anything that I'm saying is resonant. Would love to stay in touch. Either you can subscribe to my newsletter or reach out on Facebook. It's brodywelch.com. And there's plenty of options to opt in. It's also free biohacks for your nervous system, breathing meditations and stuff like that, that people can grab from my website if they're so inclined.
I love that biohack. That's great. So
Brody's in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that makes me think about how for so many people, the route into yoga is through, I need a workout. I need to get my
workout. Exactly.
Especially here in Silicon Valley where it's go, go, go all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I need to be sweating and feel like I've gotten the same kind of fix that I would get at a super intense, you know, cardio class at the gym or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And meditation at the same time.
Exactly. So I'm multitasking and all of that. And that was definitely true for me. And once you find that way in, then you start to discover all this richness that's available to you that so much more than your original impetus for going in.
Absolutely. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So cool. So you're at brodiewelch.com, BrodieWelch.com. So go check Brody out. Well, Brody, this has been really fun. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, you're so welcome. It was a pleasure. And I really enjoyed our chat.
Me too. Thanks a lot. So that's it. That's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brody Welch. Before I sign off today, just a quick reminder that pretty soon, as in next week, I am going to have some space available to take on up to 2 new one-on-one clients. I will be opening up those 2 spots for just 48 hours, first come, first served. And when those spots are filled, or in 48 hours, whichever comes first, the doors will be closed to work together one-on-one, and you'll can add yourself to the waitlist for the next time I have any openings. If you want to be notified this time, if you want to be notified next week when the doors are open, you need to get on the priority notifications list. And the way to do that is to go to livecreativenow.com/waitlist, all one word, livecreativenow.com/waitlist, waitlist. Meanwhile, if you haven't already left a rating and review over on iTunes, I would be so appreciative if you would do so. It would mean so much to me. Just go to livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review for step-by-step instructions. That's livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. Until next time, thanks again for joining me, and go get creating! Mwah!
Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.